You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manicero.
Hello? Old Dogs, and welcome to
Fun Facts Friday.
This is our once a week, only on Friday show, where we have special episodes not featuring guests, where I will share tricks, tips, terminology, and techniques that will help skyrocket you to real estate investing success. Today's topic is seller financing, a great tool in recessionary times. But before we get started, I just want to touch base with all you old dogs and young pups out there. I'm hoping you guys are doing great. We had a great show last Monday. I hope you guys had a chance to listen to it with Brent Sprinkles, who's a commercial broker. And he was talking about the surprising number of billionaires that are out there that you would not even suspect are even billionaires, living just modest lives, working their W-2 jobs, and just acquiring real estate property after real estate property after real estate property. And great show if you haven't listened to it yet. But one of the things that really stood out for me is that all of these folks that fell into this, you know, sort of anonymous billionaire roles are people that were just persistent and consistent in terms of their buying, regardless of the economy, regardless of what was going on overall. They would just continue to buy and continue to buy and continue to buy. And they didn't make excuses. They didn't say, well, you know, it's a tough year. It's hard to find properties. No, they just kept moving forward. And yeah, they might have a slower period trying to find properties that met their criteria, but they nonetheless kept moving forward. And I think that was really the key to their success, was their consistency and their persistence. And real good show. Well, anyway, that's what I'm hoping you guys are doing, is just keeping your leads coming, looking at good properties, continuing to analyze properties, continuing to dig into those markets that you see promise in, and just moving forward. I think that there's a lot of great opportunities ahead. Well, let's move into our tip for the day. Actually, it's a few little tips here, but one of the things that we may or may not do, depending on your particular style, but I think a lot of people eventually want a little bit more passive involvement with their investments, is to hire a property manager. And if you hire a property manager, you still need to be diligent, and you don't just hand over the keys to the farm and just walk away. You know, you need to stay on top of them. So here are a couple of little things that I do that I think are things that will be helpful for you in terms of just that accountability. And after a while, you work with somebody, you start to know them better, and you might be able to lighten up in certain areas. But you still always, I think, need to have some of those checks and balances in place. But a couple of tips here is make sure that you're not being gouged. That's a key one. And it's happened to me. It's happened to, I'm sure, plenty of you listening out there, where it just seems like you're just getting charged all kinds of stuff from your property management. And so there's a couple of things you can do. One, you must require written approval if a maintenance job is going to exceed a certain amount of money. Now, I like to sometimes keep that amount low. I'll say like $100 until I feel comfortable and confident and I can kind of up that amount. But you know, if they go ahead and they charge you something or go ahead with something that's not pre-approved and it's over $100, well, you know, you need to pull on the reins on them and say, look, this is the agreement. We need to stick to this. Also, to, you know, to make sure that the whatever they say they did was done, have them, you know, nowadays you can just take a picture with your phone and send it with the invoice, a picture of the repair so that we know that there was, in fact, something done. It helps. And then when work needs to be subcontracted out, I always ask for three bids. And I've had some property managers say, no, we don't do that. We have our crew and we use the people we do. And it's caused me to break bonds with those people if they weren't willing to at least try to give a reasonable bid out to others so that we can see that this price is in the ballpark of where it should be. The winning bidder, you know, should provide a copy of his or her license. You want to make sure that they have a contractor's license, a workman's comp policy, and liability insurance. Lien waivers should be signed when the work is paid for. Pictures should also be submitted with the bid. So those are just a couple of key things that you might want to do to help. Maintenance expenses are one of those that can really get out of hand if you don't monitor them. You know, set up a budget and come up with that target amount. Now, granted, things may happen. There may be something that collapsed or you had to do some more major repairs, but try to stay within your bounds as much as you can. All right, well, let's jump into our topic. And this one I think is really important for this time. You know, we are in certainly uncertain economic times right now. Mortgage performance, understandably, has deteriorated over the course of 2020, of course, because of COVID. I think that the year ended with 1.54 million more delinquent mortgages and 1.7 million more that were seriously delinquent than at the start of the year, calling it a looming reminder of the challenges facing the market in 2021. There are also a lot of, you know, sort of a moratorium on foreclosures in different areas. There are also forbearance. I think most of those may have expired by now, but there are still forbearance out there. So there's a lot of things that are holding back sort of the real results of what may be happening out there in the economy. And so today we're going to focus, and I'm going to try and focus a lot of sort of tools that we can use during recessionary times. As for more and more foreclosures are going to be out on the marketplace, there are going to be more and more opportunities to be able to negotiate, you know, some good deals that hopefully work well for both the seller and the buyer. But this is a great opportunity right now to be able to find those discounted properties. And I know there's a lot of investors I know that are just holding on to cash right now, you know, that are waiting for those opportunities, Warren Buffett being one of them, there will be some good things you can get out there. And one of the ways that you can sort of maximize on that, maybe you only have 50,000 set aside, or 5 or 10,000, or maybe you've got a couple hundred thousand set aside. But whatever it is, you want to try to make that money last as long as you can. And one of the ways you can do that is there are some deals you're going to be able to have the opportunity to do seller financing. So, you know, we've talked about this a lot, and I say it too. You know, you can get properties with little or nothing down, but it's not always easy. But in a recession, it is definitely easier because people are in a position where they need to do something quick. And so I think, you know, one of the most popular types of sort of little or no money down processes is seller financing. And it's probably one of the oldest of the sort of the creative options out there. And I think in recent years, with the increase of you know, easy credit and record low mortgage rates, though, you know, it hasn't been used as much. But knowing how to use it, you know, especially as we move into times like this, is an important thing. So first, I'm going to educate you a little bit on what seller financing is. I'm going to be referencing a lot one of my favorite books you guys should have in your library. And that's The Book on Investing in Real Estate with No and Low, Money Down by Brandon Turner. So this is a great vehicle to use. But first, let's take a look at what seller financing is. It's you know, just pretty much like it sounds. The seller provides the financing. In other words, the owner of the property acts as the bank. And although legal ownership of the property changes hands, the payment is sent directly to the previous owner rather than to a bank for a specific duration and with a defined monthly payment. For example, I may want to purchase a rental house, but I do not want or am unable to get traditional bank financing. The seller would like $100,000 for the property, but is willing to carry the contract or carry papers, they call it, which is investor jargon for when someone agrees to finance a property or part of the property even they currently own, so the buyer doesn't need to get external financing from a lender. In this case, the owner would ask for, let's say, $5,000 down and a 10% interest rate on the remaining $95,000 amortized over 30 years for a monthly payment of $833.69 before taxes and insurance. I'd agree to his terms, and after doing my due diligence, I would close on the property through my local title company. I'd then look for a tenant who would rent the home for $1,600 per month and collect the cash flow difference each month. Now, in this scenario, the seller gets a great interest rate on their money. I get to buy the house for just $5,000 down, and I don't have to deal with a bank at all. Seller financing can be another great win-win for all parties involved. But what's the catch? And I would say, why isn't this a popular thing that's being done all the time? So the problem with seller financing, one major problem with seller financing, puts a wrench in the whole strategy for the millions of American homes that currently carry a mortgage, the due-on-sale clause. Now, we talked, I've talked about the due-on-sale clause quite a bit, and if you have to deal with, selling properties maybe prematurely, or maybe doing something creative like selling your LLC or doing things like this, the due-on-sale clause is a legal part of nearly every mortgage paperwork that gives the bank the right to demand that the loan be paid back in full immediately if the property is sold, hence the name due-on-sale. Okay, so you can see sort of the core problem here with the seller financing. If in such arrangement, like if you try to go around the bank and around your mortgage, set up this loan with the seller, and he's still got a mortgage there, and you default, and it could cause him to have to, maybe go into foreclosure or cause problems for him. So the due on sales clause gives the bank the right to demand full payment. It doesn't require the bank to do so. So the bank may be, accepting of the arrangement and never say a word. However, the risk you carry is great whenever you sell a property that has a due on sale clause. So that can always be something that holds you back. Obviously, it's not a situation you want to find yourself in where, the person's financing it. And, if there's a default on payments, then it's going to be you that, that's going to suffer for it as the seller. So I would say, that sort of the best situation is, without a doubt, is if you find somebody who basically owns their house outright, okay? So there is no loan to be paid off. Your goal when using seller financing is to find sellers who don't have that mortgage. Although this may seem difficult, I think the LA Times reported that 29.3% of American homeowners do not have a mortgage on their property. Therefore, literally millions of properties are primed for you to buy using seller financing. Now, why buy using seller financing? Seller financing, and I talked about this a little bit, I touched on it, is that it's going to make your initial cash last longer. If you don't have to spend a lot of money and you can get the the owner of the property to carry that note for a little while, you can use the rest of your resources to buy more properties. That's one of the easiest ones that comes to mind. But there's also the sort of the ease of financing. You don't have to go through the bank and all of the paperwork and qualifications and the possibility of the deal not going through, or maybe you've already got a number of mortgages and you're maxed out and you can't get any more mortgages and if you're in that situation, you know, this would work out really well. There is the possibility of even no down payment where you might be able to work out a deal with them, or at least low down payments, because you're dealing directly with the homeowner seller. There are no cut and dry rules regarding the down payment. You aren't dealing with rigid rules imposed by Fannie or Freddie, which require 20 to 30% down on an investment property. Instead, you get what you negotiate with the seller. The seller may want nothing down, or they may want 50%, but you won't know until you ask and negotiate. And speaking of people trying to purchase a home with little funds, our new sponsor, Equity and Help, can also be a great resource. At Equity and Help, the simple act of investing makes a huge difference to American families. While an 8 to 12% return average is a reward in itself, there's very little that can top the ability to help a family in need. Over 50% of Americans spend more than half of their earnings on rent payments. And what Equity and Help does with that information is to base their investment model on shrinking that figure. Equity and Help has helped 375 families find a home so far. Their mission is to give families the realization of the American dream to own a home of their own when they might not have otherwise been able to. If you are interested in a philanthropic investment model that garners an average return of 8 to 12%, call your philanthro investor consultant, Sky Logan, at 844-552-8828 or visit equityandhelp.com for more information. That's equityandhelp.com. Another reason you might use it is the option for creativity in structuring a deal. As I mentioned earlier, the rules when dealing with banks can be extremely rigid. But this is not the case with seller financing. Seller financing allows you to get creative to solve a problem. Rates, terms, the payment amount, payment dates, and everything else is completely negotiable, which can turn a mediocre deal into a great deal. Another advantage is that you can purchase unfinanceable properties. Sometimes the condition of a property may be too poor to allow you to use traditional financing. In these cases, seller financing can give the buyer a chance to own the property, begin fixing it up, and possibly refinance into a more traditional form of financing down the road after they've got their property to where they think it's going to be its maximum value just through the improvements. Advantage would be, it doesn't show on your credit report. Unless the seller of the home signs up with one of the credit reporting agencies to report the debt, very unlikely, chances are your seller finance deal will not end up on your credit report. This can make obtaining other loans and mortgages in the future much easier. There are no doubt, even other reasons why you might want to use seller financing. So don't be afraid to seek it out. If you can ask that person there, it doesn't hurt to ask. And you could get turned down or they could go for it. Why would a seller want to sell their home with seller financing? If I gave you a choice between getting $100 today or $1 per month for the next 30 years, which would you take? Most of us want the $100 right now. But if you do the math, $1 per month for 30 years is $360, which is more than three times the lump sum of $100. Still want the $100? Perhaps. Some of you reading would take the $1 a month, whereas others would take the lump sum. It all comes down to personal choice. The same principle this question demonstrates is true for home sellers. Many home sellers, own their home free and clear. They would, rather take the cash and move on. However, for a large number of sellers, the value of getting monthly payments outweighs the needs for a lump sum check. let's look at, you know, more closely at why owners might want to use seller financing. And I think it's real important to know this, because if you're going to propose it to somebody, you know, they may just say, why? Why would I want to? And then here are some of the reasons you can give them. Monthly income. Perhaps the most common reason sellers would prefer to sell via financing is to get monthly income. Now, if they're a landlord and maybe they've been renting properties out, they understand the value of that monthly mailbox check, you know, of getting that consistent cash flow coming in all the time. So, I mean, this is what the banks do, right? The banks basically, they're in the business of lending money, and they'll take that $100,000 you owe and turn it into $500,000, you know, just with interest. So there is an advantage of doing that. A better ROI is another reason. Many homeowners choose to sell with seller financing because the interest they get from the financing is greater than they would get likely elsewhere. For example, if a homeowner were to sell a home for $100,000, they could put that money into a certificate of deposit at the bank and maybe receive, if it's a high-paying CD, 1.5% annual percentage. Or they could use the seller financing to get 6, 8, 10, you know, 15%. I mean, it's all part of the negotiation part of it. You can also spread out your taxes. Anytime you make money, the government wants a share. And when you sell real estate, it's no different. This issue may not be as important for homeowners because of the IRS rule that allows homeowners to avoid paying taxes on up to $500,000 in profit from selling their primary residence, as long as it meets certain specific criteria. However, real estate investors are not so lucky and must pay taxes when they sell. For example, if an investor spends 30 years paying off a rental property mortgage and now owns the home free and clear, and he decides to sell the property for $100,000, that investor would need to pay taxes on that gain, which could result in a hefty tax bill. Therefore, many investors choose to sell using seller financing rather than getting a lump sum to spread out most of those payments over the life of the loan on the seller financed property. So, you know, you can see sort of the advantage there, too, is, you know, these are people that like cash flow or they wouldn't have been a landlord in the first place. So if you're buying from an investor, sometimes, you know, that can be a point of negotiation. Say, hey, look, you're going to get your monthly cash flow here, but you're not going to have the headaches of having to, you know, unclog the toilets and deal with the troublesome tenants and all of that. You know, that's all in the hands of the person that has basically signed that note. So there are some big advantages there. Maybe you just can't sell it otherwise. As I mentioned earlier, many properties simply are not sellable to a typical bank-financed borrower because they are in such poor condition. A seller financing can allow the seller to unload such a property without needing to fix it up first. And here's just an example of a seller finance deal here that Brandon Turner uses. I think it's pretty good here. But so Paul owned a nice triplex in the suburbs of Chicago. He purchased the property with all cash 10 years earlier and has now decided it's time to retire and begin looking at his options. Paul knows the property is worth approximately $250,000. If he tries to sell it through a real estate agent, he'll spend $15,000 in commissions and another $10,000 in seller-assisted closing cost, netting him $225,000. However, after paying taxes, he'd likely have only around $150,000 remaining, which it may be able to, you know, earn 8% on the stock market. Instead, Paul talks with Samantha, an up-and-coming real estate investor excited to get her first property. Samantha has been learning from Paul for several months and built a great relationship with him. So Paul sells Samantha the property for $250,000 with just $3,000 down to cover closing costs and 8% interest-only loan on that $250,000. Paul now makes $20,000 per year from the property, 100% passively, while Samantha owns and manages the property and collects the cash flow every month. So you can see up to this point, you know, I've discussed seller financing mostly from an entirety position, meaning that the entire property is sold using seller financing. However, seller financing lets you get creative too. And one such creative way to use seller financing is known as partial seller financing. What if a seller doesn't own their home free and clear, but does have some good equity in it? What if the owner has 50% equity in his home or 90%? This kind of situation allows you to let the seller finance just be part of that deal, while a traditional lender finances the other part. This can get a little bit confusing, but let's look at an example. And Charlie, for example, owns his home, which is currently for sale for $100,000, but he owes only $50,000 to the bank on his mortgage. Susan is a buy and hold investor who is looking to buy Charlie's property, but she doesn't have the large down payment needed for a conventional mortgage. So Susan works a partial seller financed arrangement with Charlie and her lender, in which the bank provides a $65,000 first mortgage. Charlie agrees to carry back a second mortgage for $30,000, and Susan can put just $5,000 down. The $65,000 goes to pay off the original $50,000 loan of Charlie's, and he ends up with $15,000 in cash plus a note for $30,000, giving him some monthly income for the next X number of years. So, you know, don't worry if that sounds confusing, but this is pretty creative and stuff that you can put together as you begin to understand seller financing and look for ways to be able to use it. You might think, well, gosh, this sounds great. I'd love to do it. But in reality, you know, how am I going to do this and how am I going to find these deals? Well, the first one is just obvious. Ask, you know, any deal you're doing, just ask, hey, are you open to seller financing? You'd be surprised of the people that might respond to that, especially if you can present the advantages to them. Also, you know, as you're searching for properties, scanning MLS, Craigslist, or whatever it may be where you're going to try to find these properties, keep an eye out for phrases such as owner will carry or OWC, flexible terms, seller financing, and motivated, as well as any other indication that the seller is open to a conversation about seller financing. And then you can also do your direct mail. Although, you know, we've talked about that a lot on this show, this is something that you know, you can buy lists that have people that are ideal for this type of situation. There's bankruptcy lists, there's divorce lists, there's out-of-state owners. I mean, there's a lot of different lists that people can tap into to do direct mail. Now, are there risks and drawbacks for seller financing? Well, seller financing can provide some excellent options for you as a buyer, but the strategy is not without some risks and dangers. Here are a few things that you might want to be aware of, and I mentioned one of them, the due on sale clause. It's vitally important that you understand what the due on sale clause is and why it matters. You don't want to endanger the seller's credit or your relationship with the seller by trying to circumvent this clause. Understand that if you buy a home using seller financing and the home has a mortgage with a due on sale clause, the bank may foreclose on the seller, leaving both of you in a financial mess. So be aware of that and realize the risk involved if you go down that path. Higher interest rates. Although seller financing allows for incredible creativity, generally speaking, you will pay a higher interest rate. That's one of the appeals to the seller. This has not always been the case, but in today's lending environment with loan rates, you know, I mean, 2%, 3% right now, getting a seller to accept an interest rate as low as that is difficult, although some investors do negotiate 0% interest seller finance loans. Just be sure to run the numbers with the interest rates you are planning on getting and make sure that they work for the deal. Fewer potential properties. Yeah, you have to look a little harder for these types of properties. Let's face it, even though seller financing can be a great win-win for both parties, the vast majority of homeowners are either unable because of existing mortgages or unwilling to carry a contract and provide seller financing. Some just don't understand it and they don't want to take the chance. Therefore, the pool of potential deals is significantly smaller when you are looking to work with seller financing. But don't let that discourage you. As I mentioned earlier, approximately 30% of the homes in America do not have a mortgage and could be great opportunities for seller financing. Seller financing doesn't mean, you know, buy a bad deal. I mean, before we move on, you know, here, I want to make sure that it's clear, although seller financing allows you to obtain properties without using a bank, that does not give you an excuse to overpay for a property. Many real estate investors like to sell using seller financing because they can charge a premium for the property. However, you should not pay a premium. Leverage is only leverage when used responsibly. Otherwise, it simply becomes a liability. So go out there, add the seller financing tool to your toolbox, and go make some things happen here. I think that this is something that you need to be aware of. As we're approaching recessionary times here, you want to be prepared and be able to maximize your opportunity to acquire as many good, viable properties as possible. And I think that this might be a tool you can use. Well, that's it for today. Please note, Old Dog listeners, everything presented here today can be accessed in our show notes on the Old Dogs website at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. And you're going to look for the episode entitled Seller Financing, a Great Tool in Recessionary Times. So until next time, remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.